Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair.
It's great to be here to speak directly to the woke mob.
I laugh so much in this job. It just makes me happy.
Don't boo. Vote.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the 1 o'clock hour. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And we are very excited for our next guest for this segment because this week is the Berkey. And so we are excited to learn more about it. And here to tell us more about it is Blair Flickinger, who is the marketing director for the American Birkenbeiner Ski Foundation. And it looks like you're taking this call from outside, Blair.
I am. In true Nordic spirit, I'm out here on Main Street in downtown Hayward. We got our international bridge set up right behind me. That happened yesterday. We've got snow starting to come in on Main Street, and they're going to be working through the night to get this town ready for tomorrow's first events.
That's so exciting. And that is going to be one of my questions, because I was saying before the break, I have a good family friends that go every single year. And so I gave him a heads up that we were talking to you today on the segment. And he said he's a little concerned about how mashed potato-y it's going to be because of the storm that's coming through. And so there's already snow?
Yes. Well, luckily, we're not as worried about this storm as some people might be.
Okay.
So a couple weeks ago, we had a big warm-up here in Hayward, and it actually compressed the snow we had really well. Our groomers were able to get out and work on that. So we have a really, really good base layer down underneath the fresh snow that we're going to be getting. And our groomers, they're professionals. They do this all year round. They've been preparing for this week since November. They can take the blades on their groomers and just push that fresh snow off to the side, revealing that really nice hard base. So it's all going to be good. You're in good hands with our groomers here at the American Birkenbeiner.
That's amazing. So for people who are not familiar, because not everyone is a skier, what is the Birkenbeiner?
So, it started as one race. So the American Birkenbeiner is a 50-kilometer event that starts up in Cable, Wisconsin. They ski a lot all the way down here to Hayward, Wisconsin, through a lot of county forests, and they end right here on Main Street. And the race's history is really in the Norwegian stories you hear about the two Birkenbeiner warriors getting Prince Haakon to safety. So they skied 50 kilometers through the wilderness to get this prince to safety during a civil war. And this race was modeled after that historic event.
That is so, I actually did not know that part of the history. And so, and how long has the race been happening in northern Wisconsin?
So this is the 49th American Birkenbeiner. Wow. It's actually happened a few more years than that. But 2 years it had to be canceled because of weather. So the opposite problem we have this year. There were a couple years where it warmed up and the snow melted and they just couldn't do the race. But this is the 49th American Birkenbeiner. And since then, it's really grown. It started as one race. Now we have the Cortalopet, which is 29 kilometers, the Prince Haakon, which is 15 kilometers, and a whole bunch of events starting tomorrow with our open track series, which was kind of born of the pandemic. So folks who want to get out and ski those courses but don't necessarily want to do it with 6,000 of their closest friends. So they get to come out tomorrow and enjoy pristine conditions and wide open trails. And then Thursday is really fun. That's our spectator like extravaganza, in my opinion. We start off the morning with the Barky Berkey. So that's right away about 120 people come and dogs pull them on skis.
That's
it's
amazing.
Really fun to watch.
You call it
you
the
see
you call it
ultra
the,
competitive skiers.
You call it the Barky Berkey?
Barky Berkey. And if you come to the start line, you will understand why.
Is there any chihuahuas?
Yeah, so
are there any chihuahas pulling people
there?
Or is it mostly big dogs?
So I think there were a couple Yorkies last year.
Wow.
So we see everything from like a Great Pyrenees down to a Yorkie to really fine-tune racing animals.
That's amazing.
And Blair, I'm curious, what is the best time for someone to do 50 kilometers cross-country skiing? How long does that take?
So believe it or not, our top elite skiers do it in around 2 hours.
Wow.
What?
I mean, yeah. Wow. That is...
It's pretty insane.
That is insane. What's your fastest time?
I think the fastest I ever skied the Berkey was 3 hours and 25 minutes.
That's just
which for me was really good.
No, that is really good because it's just, it's so much working out. It's like, it's so much, it's such a long extended period of exertion that I don't know if I'm up for it, but it's, I hats off to everyone who does do it. So you said it's 6,000 people?
Yes. So we have between all of our events from Wednesday through Saturday, we actually have about 10,700 people registered this year. And of that group of people, about 6,500 of them are doing the American Birkebeiner on Saturday.
And so how many different states and countries are represented as far as how many people are descending upon northern Wisconsin for this?
A lot. So every state except for Louisiana is represented this year. So I have a personal mission next year to have 50 states participate in the 50th American Birkebeiner. So if I can find someone from Louisiana, I will make sure they get an entry into the Berkey next year. Mark my words.
Our guest is...
And then we have 20 different countries this year.
Oh, wow.
Our guest is Blair Flickinger. She is the marketing director for the American Birkebeiner Ski Foundation, which all gets underway this week. What are some of the other events that the people can take part in, Blair?
Yeah, so I mentioned the Barkey Berkey. A really fun one is our Barney Berkey. So we have hordes of young children on skis. It's really festive. So that happens Thursday afternoon, followed up by our Junior Berkey. So those are both great kids events. We get a lot of spectators out watching, you know, their niece or nephew or grandkids, kids, all the above. And then Thursday night is actually locally a really renowned evening. The Berkey Giant Ski event is going to be taking place. And that is an event for, I think it's a little more of the non-skiers typically, which is great. We love having something that the whole community can gather around. But it's six-person teams, and they are on a set of giant skis. So they're all attached to the same ski. They race head-to-head against competitors, and it's a single elimination tournament.
So it's kind of like they're all on, so there's two very long skis, and your legs have to go in the same direction. How many times do people Correct. Actually fall? Like, how do you train for that?
Often. there's a big gap between the people who have it dialed in and figured out and the people who can't go more than about 3 or 4 feet without tipping over. So it's good for a laugh. It's a fun event to bring the kids out to hang out, maybe, you know, head to some of the downtown businesses afterwards. That's on 5 o'clock or at 5 o'clock on Thursday.
So I've been up in that portion. We have a station up in Amory. We have a station in Hayward, but as far as you said, 10,000 people probably throughout the week that descend onto the area. Where do they all stay? So it's like every single hotel and Airbnb just packed this week every year?
Yes, it is. I mean, we're lucky to be in an area that can handle that because we have all the different lake communities nearby. So a lot of housing options. But people, once they get in and find a rental, they're booking it out the next year, the day they leave usually.
I would imagine because, you know, I mean, we actually talked about this for the Ojibwe Olympic event that happened up in even further north. And they were saying they were worried because so many people wanted to come of just, this is sometimes an area that doesn't always have to accommodate that many people at one time. And so, but this is with 50 years, obviously people come to expect that they know a lot of people are showing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have been some good improvements made over the years. I mean, the International Bridge, which is behind me being a big one, in the history of the Berkey, because this allows Highway 63 to stay open. Otherwise, you know, Highway 63 was closed for a period of time every year. So the International Bridge has been a great addition. And there are also two other bridges out on the race course, one by 00. So that goes over the road, which keeps that highway open. And then another, the Key Log Crossing. So we have three different bridges. That's made a huge difference for our community in terms of people being able to get to their houses, get around town. And we're always trying to refine that with parking and shuttles and how we can make it easier for everyone because it is a lot of people. I mean, once all of the spectators get here along with their skiers and family members, anywhere from, you know, 20 to 30,000 people is what we expect to be coming through Hayward this week.
It's got to be a remarkable financial boon for that area.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And we're, you know, we couldn't do it without the support of our local businesses and all of our volunteers. And they really make this happen. I mean, just thinking about Main Street, all the city workers that were hauling snow onto the bridge yesterday, and they'll spend hours doing that tonight. They've been stashing snow around town for months now as they plow, just so they can haul it down here for these few days of events in Hayward. So it's really neat to see the community come together and want to make this happen for the financial reasons, for the fun, for the athletes all around.
Absolutely. So as far as for the American Birkin Beiner Ski Foundation year round, this is obviously the big week, but you guys have events all year round. And so what are some of the other things, if it's not this week, that people can look forward to? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so ski, run, and bike. We do a whole bunch of different events, and we're really excited because we are trying to celebrate our 50th anniversary this whole year. So we'll be kicking things off. We have actually the Fat Bike Berkey coming up on March 11th. So that's always 2 weeks after the Berkey, and it's the one time of year where fat bikers get to race on our really nicely groomed cross-country ski trail. Most of the time, fat bike races are happening on much smaller trails, narrow trails. This is really almost like a road race on snow. It's super fast on those hard-packed trails. People love it. So we get a lot of folks coming for that. And then we actually took over an event. It used to be called the Bora Epic, but Bora Teamwear actually kind of gifted that event to us last year. So we have mountain bike races happening in June as part of Epic Bike Fest, Berkey Trail Run. We do a 5K during the Lumberjack World Championships. That's a really fun community event. We've got women's camps, all kinds of different things going on throughout the year. I think 15 weekends a year we're doing events.
Wow. And we'll put that in today's show notes, because when I was looking at the website, it's stuff that's all year round. So then final question, we'll let you go. But first, for two newbies, where would you recommend starting if we were ever, Jane and I were to ever try to start with cross country skiing?
Let's see. So you personally, if you wanted to start cross country skiing, like where to go or how to get into it?
I guess is it recommended for, like, if you've never done it, how hard is it to start? We'll say that way.
I would say it's pretty easy to start. Okay. If you walked into a ski shop in your local community and told them you're a beginner, they're going to find you a setup that you could rent for the day or for the weekend and go out and tool around your backyard or tool around the trails. It's really pretty easy entry point, and it's a lot of fun.
All right, perfect. Blair Flickinger, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck this week. Can't wait to hear about it. All right, we'll be back in a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And in addition to being Election Day, it is also Mardi Gras.
Fat Tuesday.
Uh-huh. And so have you ever been to any Mardi Gras celebrations like New Orleans or even places?
I was in New Orleans when the Packers played there.
Oh.
And won the Super Bowl.
2011?
Yes.
Okay.
And I would never go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras.
After that experience?
It was so nuts just for that event. I can't imagine what this is like.
I feel like I missed my window. It's kind of like how I feel about Coachella, where it's like,
I don't want to deal with it.
I think I'm too old now.
Yeah.
And not that I'm old, but my patience level for massive drunk crowds.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it also is kind of like a bucket list thing where it's one of, I would say, top 10 staple events, U.S. events. I mean, granted, this is a global event, right?
Right.
You go to the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the end. Basically, this marks the end of Carnival, which starts January 6th, right after 12 days after Christmas. and you know, it's the costume. That's actually what I would do even more.
Then you need to go to Brazil.
Yes, Brazil, Barbados, mm-hmm. all of the Caribbean islands that have the massive costumes yes. and parades and stuff like that. That maybe it's not as much of a drunk debauchery that it feels like Mardi Gras can be. Because my thing, I've been to New Orleans and I love New Orleans.
It's a wonderful city.
The two different weeks I really want to go even more than Mardi Gras would be Jazz Week.
Yes.
And Halloween. I've heard Halloween is awesome.
Oh, I bet. But I have a friend who used to go to Jazz Week every year and said it was spectacular. Yeah. But any time in New Orleans, if you can't have a good time there, then you have a problem.
Yes, I agree. But yeah, so today is Mardi Gras. And this is the first, like so many events, this is the first year that's really back, at least in New Orleans, back.
Full force.
Full force. And because if you remember, one of the first cities that saw a pretty bad outbreak 3 years ago was New Orleans because Mardi Gras had just happened of COVID.
Sure.
I remember having a friend who goes every year, and he also has asthma. And so I pretty quickly checked in with him. I was like, hey, are you okay? Because they saw a huge spike after Mardi Gras because it was before really anyone knew what it was and before all of the shutdowns and everything.
Right.
So, but this is the, they're probably going to see up to 1 million people and up to $1 billion in revenue as it brings back like the full slate of events after it was still canceled in 2021. And then last year, the routes for all the parades were shortened mm-hmm. in 2022. And so, so that is back. And you know what that means for southeastern Wisconsin?
Oh, it's Punchkies.
It's Punchki Day.
It's a donut.
Are you missing all day coverage of Punchki Day like you've had to do in the past, Jane?
It's hard for me to even convey to you the despair I am feeling by not spending 6 hours on Punchki production. But I soldier on, Kristen, because I'm working with you now. And our focus has to be a little different.
Do not let Jane fool you. I asked her, I said, so should we do something? Should we go get some Punchkies for Punchki Day? She goes, please no.
No, and nothing against Punchkies and all the wonderful bakeries that produce Punchkies. It was, at least for me, when I was at that other place, it is trying to find a new way to talk about the same thing.
To be fair, because I was at that place as well last year. It was my first exposure. Because again.
Oh, that's right. You weren't here.
This is not as big of a thing in Madison.
Sure.
There's not as big of a Polish population in Madison as there is in Milwaukee. So
right.
The stronghold of this tradition was not something I was privy to. So it was only in moving back to Wisconsin and that I even found out what these were. And I got to try my first one last year.
It's a jelly donut.
And it's a jelly donut.
Yeah.
I think originally, though, they were made with, like, pork fat. So they weren't always sweet as far as the savory versus sweetness of what they are today. And
but I always thought part of the point was to use up the sugar and the sweet things before Lent begins.
Yes. That's what I understand it to be as well.
Yeah.
And so... But I was joking this morning as far as that would be a incentive to get people, maybe get people to the polls because it's both Election Day and Punchki Day.
Hey.
So instead of a voting sticker, maybe you get I voted Punchki.
I voted Punchki. That's got potential.
That's got potential. That's,
that could have a life.
and then that led to a conversation of what do you prefer, a cream puff or a Punchki?
I would puff.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you eat it like a sandwich or
no.
Do you do the thing where you take off the top and you scoop it and...
Okay. This is what I do.
Okay.
I get a cream puff and then I get one of the State Fair brownies. That's a brownie that's as big as your face.
Okay.
And then I take apart the cream puff and I put all the cream on the brownie.
But you don't eat the pastry?
No.
You don't like the pastry?
And I'm not a big powdered sugar fan either.
Another reason why you eat Punchki.
Punchki. Yeah.
All right, so.
And that's another thing we're going to have to do when we go to the State Fair.
Oh, yeah. Next.
August.
Well, and because this year, that was funny for State Fair last year,
there was a little bit of a COVID spike, and it was right before my wedding.
Oh, that's right.
So I was just like, there's nothing there that I need to eat, considering I'm wearing a two-piece wedding wedding dress, and I'm not risking getting COVID. So I missed State Fair last year, so we'll have to double down this year on all of the things.
We'll hit it hard.
All right, when we come back, if you're real friends, should you have to accommodate the most COVID careful among you still? We're going to talk about it. That and other 2023 etiquette rules. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. We would love to hear from you during this segment because this is the ongoing conversation we're having about the New York Magazine's decisive statements on how to act in 2023.
Etiquette guide.
Etiquette guide. So 844-967-2789. But before we move on from that, we had some Poonchki love on the text line.
We do. 507 checking in. A jelly donut and any other day is just as delicious. I don't really understand why they don't make Poonchkis all year round. Because then the specialness is gone and they wouldn't have lines.
It's kind of like how Spotted Cow is only, like, by having manufactured limitations on something, it increases demand.
Scarcity.
Right?
Yeah, scarcity. Yeah.
But agreed. And, you know, if you like a jelly donut,
go for it.
I think if you just get a jelly donut, this won't be called a Poonchki, apparently.
You can call it whatever you want.
All right. So back to etiquette and whether or not we agree with the final ruling that New York Magazine is saying on any of these topics. So okay. We'll start with this one. All right. So if you've met someone and they clearly do not remember you, they're saying that you should respond with, "Hi, we've met. I'm Kristen." That is the appropriate response to when you know that you've met this person.
Yep.
They do not recognize you.
Yep.
And so they're saying it's the perfect middle ground. It's assertive because you say, "We've met, I know it, and so do you."
But without saying that.
But generous by you're telling them your name so they don't have to grope around for it blindly. And I'm guilty on both sides as far as I've certainly been on the side of, "Oh yeah, we've met." But I've also been on the side of not remembering that we've met. And that always, for me, I always feel really bad when they're like, "No, we've met before." I'm like, "Oh gosh," or "I don't remember their name" or something like that. Like, I would much rather not be remembered by someone I know that I've met than be the person who doesn't remember.
Yeah, than the other way around. I would agree with you. And I think that's a great idea. And I think for the person who's saying, "Hey, we've met, but I'm Jane," that's a gift. I think that's a gift.
Yes.
Because I'm terrible with names.
Yeah.
Really, really, I mean, not good.
Are you really? I didn't know that about you.
Oh, it's bad. I worked with a woman at my previous job who was a sales rep, and granted, our interaction was kind of limited, but I worked with her for 3 years, and I thought her name was Pam.
What was her actual name?
Well, I didn't find out until her last day in the restroom, and I said, "Oh, Pam, I saw you're leaving," and she said, "I am on my, it's Anne."
What?
And she was very gracious about it and very kind, but I was mortified. So yeah, I've called people the wrong name for years.
Oh, Jane.
Yeah, it's bad.
That's
I know.
On her last day, she finally is like, it's Anne.
It's Anne.
It's not Pam.
Oh, good luck.
Oh, I would die.
I know, but what are you gonna do?
Oh, I know.
And she was very sweet about it, and she laughed, but still. So I would love that if someone would say, we have met, and you know, my name is Anne.
Like, this would still make, I think, no matter what, is so long as you remind me that we've met, and I didn't remember, because I think there's also the people who, that's like a power move.
Oh yeah.
To just pretend you know who the person is, but you're just pretending that you don't. I mean, that's not my problem. My problem is that I meet a lot of people.
You do.
And so it's more the actual genuine. Now I just feel bad because I don't recognize you.
Sure.
The power move. I feel like if you know it's a power move, then this becomes a lot more polite way to do it.
Definitely.
Versus a gracious way that this is a. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I think we can agree that they got this one right. All right. So then the next one. So knowing where we are with COVID protocols that are basically, you know, lax now. I mean,
almost certainly non-existent.
Yeah. But when it comes to your friend group, if you're real friends, they're saying you need to accommodate the most COVID careful amongst you.
I think that's right.
I think it's right too.
I do.
I think even if you're behind closed doors to your spouse, you roll your eyes a little bit. But I do think if you still have people in your life who are immune compromised, still very cautious,
elderly relatives that they see,
if they are still asking you to mask when you're sick, not come, et cetera, I think this is the right call that you still need to, if you really care about that person,
yes,
you need to give them the grace to, because it's like a lot of them, it's like, is it really that big of a deal? Like, was any of this ever more than annoying in a lot of ways? As far as, and granted, I understand for people who were working parents who every time there was a kid sick and they had to stay home at work because all the kids had to stay home.
Right.
I'm talking more about masking and distancing and stuff like that. That was obnoxious, but was it really affecting your life?
Right. And I think too, if you're not willing to accommodate the most COVID careful among you, then have the grace to decline. You know, if they wanted to get together for dinner or whatever and they want you to mask, then just decline the invitation. But yeah, I think you should accommodate that.
All right. Well, we're basically not a lot of disagreement yet.
I'm shocked.
Again, if you disagree with us or you have thoughts on either of these two prompts, because we got two more, 844-967-2789. All right. Next one. I'm interested to see your response to this.
Oh, goody.
Never answer a compliment with a compliment. Those of us who are so good at taking compliments.
Yes.
Immediate reaction?
I mean, if I said, I like that color blue on you.
Well, we're basically wearing the same color blue today.
So right.
Like, I like that color blue on you.
is that awful? I don't think that's awful.
Well, this is the explanation. A couple of months ago, I met a famous singer backstage after her concert. I was wearing a loud pair of pants, the kind that attract a lot of attention wherever they go, designed by a friend. I like your pants, the singer said. I like your glasses, I responded in a panic. Horrible. False sounding. And how could it not be? A compliment that follows a compliment, even if it's meant sincerely, will always sound forced. I've thought about it for months since and know exactly what I should have said. Thank you. Owning the compliment. And my friend will be so happy to hear that you liked them. Gracious. And I think, because I think it is, I think it's this like default, ooh, what am I supposed to do? I'm uncomfortable with this compliment, especially in that scenario where it's like a famous person and we're all weird around celebrities no matter what.
Yes.
But the default of not just being able to say thank you or immediately needing to tell you that you got it on sale or it has pockets or I like this thing on you to deflect the attention that this compliment is putting on you and the uncomfortable feeling of having to take that compliment. I think I would agree with this. Unless because I guess even if you mean it in that succession, maybe it
doesn't seem sincere.
Sincere.
Well, and for the loud pants person, you wear those knowing they're going to get attention.
Yeah, so this couldn't have been the first time that you got...
Someone commented on that, so... But yeah,
But it was a celebrity, so she got nervous.
Yeah, that'll throw you. Okay. But it is difficult, and we've talked about this before, especially, I think, among Midwesterners, and it's been my experience in Wisconsin, that we do not take compliments well. And we always try to undercut it somehow because... It's like letting it go to your head.
Is that what it is? Like, where does it come from?
I'm not exactly sure, but that's all I can think of is, you know, you accomplished something good. Well done. Good on you. Now get over it. Don't get cocky. Don't let it go to your head. Because that's how we were raised. And it's almost like if you acknowledge the compliment, then you're getting cocky. And for that, you will pay.
You will pay. You will lament at some point.
You will be lamenting somewhere for some period of time.
Speaking of which, are you going to go get ashes tomorrow?
No.
No. Are you giving anything up for Lent?
No.
No.
You?
No.
No.
It's been a while since I gave anything up for Lent. I think it was a challenge as a kid. It was usually candy. But now I'm trying to think, what would I give up? Alcohol, but I feel like you just did that in January.
You did.
But so yeah. All right. So
we're in agreement again.
Yeah. This is
kind of shocking.
This is a record potentially. All right. This one I think we're probably also going to agree with, if I'm going to be honest.
All right.
If someone mispronounces a word, but you knew what they meant, move along. You're laughing.
I may be able to think of instances on this program where you have corrected someone for...
I've also been corrected.
This is true.
I mispronounce things. One, I mispronounce things all the time. I trip over my words a fair amount. I would not say I am the most polished. I didn't go to broadcast school, Jane.
Oh.
And I think it's more of the annoying, like when someone goes, I went to Ibiza, and someone corrects you, goes, Ibiza? Or
it's a snobby thing.
It's also I think there's two different things. There's the pronunciation of, like, we tease Greg with, what is it?
Innovative.
Innovative. I think it's also because I can't say it the way that he says it.
It's because no one says it like that.
So there's those jokes. Then maybe it's separate, the idea of whether or not you're supposed to say a word with an accent when you are pronouncing it. So, like, this, I think this opens a bigger can of worms. So there's actual... non-proper nouns, let's say. But no, I think just in general, American English words that we can, if you correct someone's pronunciation of it, that's one thing. And I agree. Just keep, unless you have that kind of relationship with them where you're kind of just teasing them. But as far as like shaming them into correcting it right, let it go.
Well, because it is essentially a put down.
Yeah.
You know.
It's also when you correct someone's grammar of saying, when they say, you know, they flip around me and I, or put themselves first or whatever.
Don't get me started on whom.
I actually really like whom. It's one of the ones that I actually can remember how to use it correctly. But then I also think, and we don't have enough time to get into it, and I don't speak another language, but I guess I can think about it from the American side of correcting, how arrogant would it seem if someone had English as a second language and the way they were pronouncing a word in their accent, you were correcting them to try to say it how we're supposed to say it. Because that's sometimes what it feels like when you pronounce the name of a city, like a Colombian city or Brazil or, mm-hmm. you know, any of these cities. And the person who knows how the people who pronounce it, who are from those cities, would pronounce it, and they correct you. But isn't it, to a certain extent, that is just when you have an accent, how you pronounce something. And so does this also apply if you don't say something with the correct accent, despite the origin of that word? It's a big question with only 30 seconds before our next break. So if you have thoughts, you can let us know on that. Otherwise, when we come back, we're going to round out the show with a reminder of all of our election coverage tonight. But if you want to hit us up, 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And guess what?
What?
If you didn't get enough of us today, you can come back at 7 tonight when Jane and I will kick off the pregame coverage of tonight's primary, spring primary election results. And then we will hand it over to Terry Bell and Todd Elba, who is going to be anchoring the as results actually come in.
Yes.
Polls close at 8 p.m. So this is not goodbye. This is see you later today.
Just for now.
But I heard you laugh pretty hard in there. What'd you just read?
We were talking about correcting other people's grammar and if that trips you up and things like that. So we got a text from the 608 at 844-967-2789. I'm certain Dan Kelly is the kind of guy that would correct your pronunciation. We don't know that to be true.
I could also kind of see Janet Protasiewicz correcting your.
If I want to be snarky, I'll do it to people.
Do you?
Yeah, and especially if you're ticking me off.
I would say that's, I can be petty in that way. It's only if you are being obnoxious.
Yes.
And a way to put you in your place a little bit.
Exactly.
That I would partake in that, but it's never. Just because, oh, I need to correct the world.
Right.
That's really funny. Do you have any instincts on what's going to happen tonight?
I don't. I think it's really hard to gauge, again, because we've talked about how typically turnout is usually so terrible for these elections. And you know who votes regularly, folks? Old people like me. So if you're a young person and you have a different agenda than old people, it's really important for you to get out and vote, even in a primary, when it doesn't seem like it's important, but it is. Because the old crabby people who yell at you to get off their lawns are the ones who will be going to the polls today.
Yeah, I think the expectation in the Journal Sentinel, they had what to know about Tuesday's race. I think they said their like expected turnout is going to be in like the teens.
That's pathetic.
But
that makes me furious.
No, I know. I'm pretty sure for the state superintendent race back in 2021 for the primary, which there was 9 or 10 candidates. 7% turnout.
Oh my gosh.
To then, and the two lead candidates that went on to the general was Underly and Deb Kerr. And then obviously Jill Underly won. But I remember because I was trying to do videos on the different candidates and mm-hmm. reminders that there was an election. And I remember reading that the next day that it was only 7%. And this, you know, that was right on the heels of the 2020 election.
Yeah.
And it is. These are hard. Because people are tired. You know, we just did this. We just got over the exhaustion of the fall and so many political ads. And so I get it. But this is how it is. This is the reality we live in our state, that we have basically four elections every year, and it matters. And so would I vote for it to be differently if it was up for a vote? Yes, but it's not.
No, it's not.
And so you have to do your duty, find your polling place, look up what's on your ballot, go cast your vote, and then do it again in April on April 4th.
Yes, and if you don't, I don't want to hear you complain about it.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this and tried to impress this also. State elections are really important.
Yeah.
And have the most direct impact upon your daily life, much more so than national elections.
Mm-hmm.
So school boards and mayors and those jobs, you are much more likely to be impacted by directly. And that's why it's important for you to do what people around the world die for, the opportunity to have a voice. And if you really want to have a voice, we can end gerrymandering, and then your elected politicians will actually have to respond to something that you want them to do. It's astonishing.
Astonishing. All of that, everything Jane just said. And so we would love to hear from you tonight. As far as texting in, it's going to be the same number as far as your number that you were at your ward, and whether or not you voted today or early in person or absentee by mail. But come check us out tonight. We're going to be kicking off at 7. Before us, you can hear an extra hour of Devil's Advocates with,
yes,
Dom and Crute. So they're going from 4 to 7 tonight instead of their standard 4 to 6, and then they're going to hand it off to Jane and I. And first segment, we'll kind of prime the night, and then we're going to have a recording of Terry Bell's interview with Reed Epstein, who's a New York Times reporter who wrote a cover story about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Yes.
Then Dan Schaefer is going to join us for a segment to talk about his in-state reporting. Then we will check in with all of the different correspondents we have and kind of preview the races that people are going to keep their eyes on for the night. And then we will hand it over to Terry Bell and Todd Elba, who will be anchoring starting at 8 until whenever.
Whenever the larger person sings.
Okay. Way to be PC about that.
Trying.
But, you know, I don't think, I can't predict this. That I wouldn't assume that this is going to go super late compared to other very tight elections.
Well, not if only 12 people show up to vote. They
well,
should be
no,
able
more
to...
than 12 people showed up. No. Hopefully it's more than 12% is what we're
saying.
Well,
exactly.
But yeah, so we're excited. We will be back at 7. So join us. And then until then, tons of good programming left for you today. We got Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian coming up next, or the Chad Holmes Show on WXCO. But for us, check us tonight at 7 or... Not or, and. Check us out tonight at 7 and come back tomorrow at 11. Greg Bach will be here. Another great show. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Crapesters, nothing better in the world than watching a bunch of unthawed sausages race around Miller Park. Hey, put your money on the Brat or Frankie Furter.
Took my fish and pole to win.
Sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot in the walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
When it all goes to hell and I need my head right, I go to where there ain't no stop and go lights. But I got no desire for the 5-star resort.
Got a cousin with a cabin way up north.
When it's cold in the winter, I drink beer and treat. When the snow unthaws, you can bet I'll drop a ski.
Hey, dear Uncle Mike, can I drop a ski guy or no? That was rhetorical. I'm dropping her. Oh, my God.
So roll out the barrel and strike up the band. Heavens praise Lombardi, the pack is back again. And now Wisconsin, the Badgers say, it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee. It's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.